everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the back in my day head.
Okay. Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. Old man yells at Cloudhead. What's up today?
Well, Cosmo, read the card for the first time in forever. Today, we are talking about if video games have changed or have we just changed. Answer both, because change is constant, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Anyways, so, signposting, talking about video games,
yep.
What even is a video game RPG?
Yeah.
And then we're going to be talking about the replayable RPGs, because that's what this episode is about.
Yep.
The death of the replayable RPG.
And if you're sick of us just yapping about stuff, too fucking bad, because this is going to be a lot of that.
Yep. So we're going to talk about the replayable RPG, and then the problem with these giant RPGs nowadays, and the changes of taste.
Yeah. And we're going to try and be, I guess, fair and objective. But
yeah.
Also, there's no denying that maybe there's a little bit of salt on our side of this. Anyway,
all right. Salty dogs.
Okay, so yeah, we're talking about RPG video games. So first, let's define that, and not in a Steam page way, but in a for the context of this conversation.
Yes, always need some context.
Yeah.
So video game RPGs. Lots of games out there claim they're RPGs, but are they really?
Yeah.
Because an RPG game, to me, a role-playing game, is full of options and choices.
Yeah.
Right? Not just make a character.
Right.
Characters gotta have choices.
Mm-hmm. I think choices that are made in character that have some sort of effect on the game world. And, you know, you see, Borderlands, good example, calls itself a role-playing game. An action shooter, a shooter RPG, whatever. I don't think, for the purpose of this conversation, for our definition, our working definition for this episode, that doesn't count, right? Because character creation, that's not enough, really.
Right, having a skill tree that you spec out in different ways.
Right.
Is enough to get you that designation. You can claim it.
Yeah, you can say our game is an RPG, but, you know,
it's not really.
Borderlands has a couple characters to choose from and skill trees that you level up, but, you know, so does Doom Eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Doom Eternal is certainly not any kind of role-playing game, but it has character progression, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So for the purposes of this, we're talking about games where you can make choices in character, and those choices will have resonance throughout the game world.
For example, the Borderlands example, is there any world where you can side with Handsome Jack?
Nope.
No. And yes, you can choose to do the jump off the cliff mission in Borderlands 2.
Yeah.
You can choose to do that.
But it just puts you right back.
But there's no consequences. You get laughed at, Jack says some funny things, makes fun of you for a bit. But, that's not really changing anything.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what we're talking about. Another example would be, The Last of Us. It's close.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm sure somebody's going to want to argue this point.
Right.
Because
you can approach gameplay in a variety of ways. You can approach gameplay in a variety of ways different in different beats of the story. You know, you can shoot everybody, you can sneak, you can, whatever. But at no point are there, dialogue choices or options that have ramifications for the rest of the game. And, in fact, the most important pieces of dialogue and story beats are things that happen pre-scripted and you can't control. Like the big lie that Joel tells at the end of the first Last of Us. You don't get a choice about that.
That's just a cutscene you watch.
You can choose how you kill your way to that cutscene.
Or not, or sneak through, whatever.
But, a role-playing game, isn't really.
You know, some examples, like Outer Worlds, Fallout, Baldur's Gate 3.
Mm-hmm. The Elder Scrolls series, the Mass Effect series, even Mass Effect Andromeda, which is not a very good video game. It's still a role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to creating a character, you get to make choices and interact with different people and decide things that, you know, ripple throughout the game world.
Mm-hmm. And, like, then there's these weird ones that we think there's an argument to be made that, like, they are role-playing.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly, you know, what that is, we get into it later, but it's kind of looser. You bring in the role-playing.
Yeah.
So, like, the examples we have are Helldivers and Zomboids.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily tagged, like, in their Steam descriptions as role-playing games.
Yeah, it certainly wouldn't be called a role-playing game. But you can, because there is so little going on in the rest of the game world as far as
story and script. And
feedback that you get, you can do a ton of role-playing in your own head.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of the way they talked about, I don't know when the first time they talked about this, but when Bethesda talked about, the Elder Scrolls games and how, you know, a ton of that role-playing, a ton of that game is meant to take place inside the player's head. You're supposed to be, like, living your character and then, you know, projecting that into the game world through the systems that you can interact with the game.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of do that in, like, Project Zomboids. You can, you know, you can role-play as opposed to, you know, building the best shelter or whatever. You can role-play a character who is concerned with this.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it may be.
It
might be suboptimal as far as what will help you survive the longest.
Yeah, kill the most zombies, survive the longest.
Mm-hmm.
And like in Helldivers, you can choose to, you know what, I only fight on the bug planets.
Yeah.
And that changes the story of the game, right?
You can, like, if enough all the Helldivers on my ship are, we're a bug regiment, and, mm-hmm. and we have this sort of personality. And you can, you know, I see it happening a little bit right now. This is going to come out a couple weeks later, and it might have died down, I don't know. But in the new Space Marine game, people are on the voice chat in the co-op. They're, you know, role-playing as Space Marines and saying dumb stuff as if they're in the 40K universe. And that's real fun. But that's another one. I mean, you couldn't really call it a role-playing game. But I guess if you're playing the co-op missions, you get to design your character, and you could behave in a way in the confines of the game. So, like, you could role-play in a game that isn't really a role-playing game.
Yeah.
And you could even make suboptimal decisions, but, you know, the people you're playing with might get mad at you.
And why that is what we call could be a role-playing game, but, like, Last of Us and, like, The Witcher 3 and, like, The Witcher games are kind of on the line, and we're talking about them more.
Yeah.
But you don't have any choices on, like, how the cutscenes go in those kind of games. More like The Last of Us and, like, what's another one? I can't think of any. Anyways, so, like, Joel's going to do what Joel's going to do.
Yeah.
Whether, like, you snuck by...
You need to get him to the trigger point in the level that starts a cutscene.
Yes.
You can choose how you do that, but then what happens is not up to you, and...
You watch it.
None of your imagination about who Joel is or how he should behave is going to come into play.
So, like, there's no option to be like, I'm just going to be completely honest. Can't do that. So... That's kind of what we're talking about with a video game role-playing game.
Yeah.
So, replaying role-playing games and kind of why we set up that whole definition.
Well, I think maybe... Yeah, okay, continue. Sorry. I think you're going to hit what I was about to say. Okay.
Is because... Like, why we set up that whole definition is because in those role-playing games, there's huge potential for replayability because you have choices to make that affect the story in different ways. So you want to see well, how does, like, an asshole character fare throughout this world? Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm just going to be renegade all the way in Mass Effect,
yeah,
I want to see what the end is.
Mm-hmm. I want to see how these other characters respond to me. What are my options when I get towards the end? Mm-hmm. That type of stuff.
Right. And so just in general, replaying a video game, why would you replay a video game? Because it's like rereading a book, mm-hmm. right? It is a art medium that you get to experience a story in.
Interactively.
And if you play it every year, you have still changed mm-hmm. in that year. Like, you know, you've learned some things, you've seen some things, you've had changes in your relationships.
You've loved and lost.
So, like, you're just going to be in a different mindset and you're experience it differently, just like rereading a book.
Yeah. Many, many different little things that could go, you know, various different ways in a lot of the games that we mentioned. And I feel like we did bury the lead a little bit. The reason we're talking about this is because we feel like there is less of this now. There is a there's a gaming experience, specifically in role-playing games. I think maybe the best example that you and I have the most experience with might be New Vegas.
Sure.
But, some other ones as well. Games that are undeniably role-playing games, one, offer, you know, lots of different choices, lots of reasons to replay them because a lot of things can go differently. But also, and this is going to lead into the next section, also don't feel like they're asking too much. So replaying them doesn't feel like a chore or something like, oh, I don't have fucking time, I don't have that mental energy to engage with this again after I beat it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to replay New Vegas. It's fun to replay The Outer Worlds, which is kind of space New Vegas. I don't know. But we felt like that experience was kind of vanishing. And it's different from the stuff we normally talk about, but that's why we're talking about it. So,
'cause unlike rereading a book, right? So, like, you replay Halo, that's like rereading a book.
Yeah.
Right?
Nothing changes. It's just fun.
You get, some fun dopamine by, pulling off a couple headshots that, I can't remember the last time I, shot all six elites in the head the first try.
Oh. You're having a good time engaging with the gameplay loop.
That's familiar and like, oh, man, I forgot this and, like, mm-hmm. Et cetera. Right? Not an RPG. The bonus of the RPG is getting all those little moments and like being able to see something new.
Yeah.
Right. And so like that's kind of our like little thesis, I guess, is the games that we listed that we think are the pinnacle of replayable RPGs, like Fallout New Vegas, the way it's constructed is a lot of these little but interesting moments mm-hmm. that like don't last very long and like could take an hour to play through.
Right.
But then so many different ways to approach them and like that actually have lasting effects that you get to see immediately.
There's the main story, which you could mainline in, 10 hours less probably. I'm sure you could speed run it, but and then there's all these other, like the vault in New Vegas where the plant people are, mm-hmm. where the spores have infected and turned them into plant zombies. There's like four different ways you can be directed towards that quest, or you could just be wandering through the desert and find it. And, the different ways that you can be kind of nudge towards that quest mm-hmm. by conversations with NPCs or the straight up just like, hey, go here and get the thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Even in that simple situation, you're presented with a moral dilemma of what to do when you get the thing.
Because if you explore the vault, you like get all this context about like what was happening, the mm-hmm. experiments, And, like, you know, there's, like, the ultimate choice of, like, you can just blow everything up, or you can, like, you know, take a sample.
Yeah.
And then who do you give the sample to?
Right. You can take the data. You can blow it up, take the data. You can do both. And then, yeah, what do you do with it? If you choose to take something out of there like you were asked to, do you trust the people who sent you there? What are you going to do with it? There's so many different ways, one, to come to that quest. And that's mm-hmm. just one quest.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways to come to find yourself involved in that quest. Then there's a bunch of different outcomes, and those outcomes, in the best case scenario, you know, those should be informed. What you choose should be informed by the character you're playing, not by, like, you know, I want to see what happens this time necessarily. Mm-hmm. You should be like, I'm playing this sort of character, and he would do this with it. That's really cool, and that really encourages replayability, especially when the main quest of the game is only like 10 hours or so.
Yeah.
The idea of replaying New Vegas as a different kind of wasteland weirdo holds a lot of promise that doesn't go away. And maybe we should be talking more about Skyrim, because that's the more popular one and more people have engaged with that in the same way that we're yeah. talking.
Well, I think New Vegas got a huge resurgence after the Fallout
show. That's true. The Fallout show came out, and when that happened, everyone was like, oh, this is video games, and everyone who knew it was video games was like, yeah, and New Vegas is the fucking best
right.
one.
And then, you know, there was a bunch of like, oh, man, this Fallout scene is so cool. Which one should I start with? Which one should I play? New Vegas, hands down. Yeah. Everyone,
I mean, and know. Fallout 4 is easier to get into, mm-hmm. and it's a better video game in terms of how you interact with it, the controls and stuff, but New Vegas is the best one.
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah, okay. So, same stuff that we were saying about New Vegas can also be Skyrim, could also be Outer Worlds, mm-hmm. and Mass Effect, and I'm sure there's some other ones in, like, I guess one of the blind spots we have, right, talking about this is, like, there's just so many fucking video games,
yeah.
like indie shit that, like, you've never heard of before that probably do exactly what we're talking
we're
about.
We're talking about a lot of, like, pretty mainstream stuff, mm-hmm. but we're talking about, like, a big cool thing that is also fun to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
At least, like, you know, once a year, you won't get sick of it.
Yeah. And, like, you know, give us a pass because we're busy with our tabletop role-playing hobbies. So, like, I would call myself a casual video gamer.
Yeah, certainly.
I don't spend most of my time playing, you know, random Steam stuff.
No. And I know a lot of great stuff is there, and maybe someday I'll have the time to explore it a little more freely. Right. But I feel like every time I do, I'm like, oh, I just spent 10, 12, 15, 20 bucks, and I took a
whack
at it.
Played it for 3 hours, yeah. And then, eh.
I don't have... And that, we'll come back to that aspect of this conversation yeah. at the end.
But I do want to acknowledge that we have a little yes. blind spot because we haven't really mm-hmm. engaged in the indie scene yeah. of video games in the last five years.
Yeah, I haven't explored it. I do watch some stuff. I'd like to, you know,
try
hear
to keep
about,
up.
I like to hear about what cool new things there are, but mm-hmm. There is probably a ton of stuff that I don't know about.
Yeah. So, basically boils down to all the, well, say a decade from like 2004 to 2014.
Sure.
All these role-playing video games came out that were good and had replayability, and like even though the stories in them you could mainline in like 10, 15 hours, you could also spend 150 hours or more
yeah, just
playing
exploring.
Around, making several characters, several playthroughs.
Mm-hmm.
So, that is no longer the case, we feel like.
Yeah.
We have, well, in the last couple years, we have these giants, gangbuster, or, you know, really good, really well-liked games like Elden Ring
mm-hmm.
and Baldur's Gate 3, which are phenomenal role-playing games.
Yeah.
But they're fucking massive.
They are massive, and they demand so much from you.
And So why we think those aren't really replayable ones, and like Elden Ring has a case, I've replayed that twice. Well, call it one and a half, because I never finished.
Less than once a year, though.
And well, like, definitely, it's something that I couldn't just pop back into for like a good 50-hour run.
Right. Which is what I'm doing a lot right now, because, well, not. I'm popping back into things like Doom or Halo, because I can leave those paused, you know, while I do other stuff with my kids or while we're just like watching TV in the evening, and then I can just pop into 10-20 minutes of, you know, a Halo campaign and advance it a little bit, have some fun, because I know how to play it and I've done it before, and then not. Baldur's Gate 3, incredible, just like basically infinite character creation options in the beginning. Broken up into these chapters where there are a bunch of different ways to approach stuff. And, you know, a handful of really different meaningful outcomes depending on how you handle the chapter before you move on through the campaign. But we were talking about this and we're like, I don't think I'm going to come back to Baldur's Gate
for like a decade.
Yeah, for like 10 years probably.
And like, I didn't really realize that until I was like 30, 45 hours in. And like, I had made all these choices kind of just like, I don't know, you know, I mean, this seems like something my character would do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm at that like 30, 45 hour mark and I'm like, I'm fucking still in Act 1. I gotta be a lot more deliberate about the choices I make for the character I'm playing, because I'm not fucking restarting and like doing it again.
Yeah.
Like, just the thought of that, I mean, like, it just filled me with dread and like anxiety. It's like, oh no, I gotta do 45 hours to get to this decision again.
Right. It's so wildly different from the idea of starting a New Vegas playthrough and being like, I'm gonna side with the Legion this time.
Mm-hmm.
That is. It feels so much easier and so much more accessible than even the idea of creating a new character in Baldur's Gate. Because a new character in Baldur's Gate is a 5e character. Mm-hmm. It is a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition character with incredibly faithful tabletop mechanics, which means these characters are hugely in-depth, and you're going to have a party of at least a couple of them, which means you have to learn, you know, you're going to have a wizard in your party, you're going to have a rogue, you're going to have a friggin' cleric, and whoever you are as well. And during combat, you have to manage them. And the idea of starting another one, like, I don't fucking want to.
Right? Like, the time sink is just a huge barrier to replaying it to enjoy a new character who makes different choices, right?
Because then you're going to have to get off the beach. But while you're doing that, you got to find everybody. Gather your party. And then you do the grove. And there's a few different ways you can do the grove. And then there's the goblins. And then it continues that way. And it's so much. And yeah, the time it would take you to see any sort of payoff for, like, I'm going to be a... I was a fighter last time. I'm going to be a sorcerer this time. One, I hate Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition, and I hate how, you know, stupid the first three levels of characters are. I don't like it. And two, the way that game is structured, it takes you so long to get through that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you have to learn all of it.
And, like, so, the, like, taking too long to see payoff is the problem with these massive games.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in Elden Ring, if you want to do the, like, is it just the Sacred Flame? The one where, like, you're frenzy and, like, you know, you go down in that long
dungeon. The
frenzied
dungeon, flame.
The frenzied flame.
Yeah.
And, like, you
the
burn.
The madness
you,
ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I, like, was like, oh, this is pretty cool. Maybe our, you know, choose a character who, like, specs into that next playthrough. And then, like, Then there's still like another 50 hours of the game from like the point where you can choose to do that or not. And then it's like, okay, so then not only would I have to play the lead up and like do all the things to be able to make that choice, but then I would have to play 50 more hours and like, listen,
yeah,
I'm bad at the game, all right? I'm sure it wouldn't be 50 hours if you were like, you know, a fucking sweat lord being able to kill every boss on the first try.
I'm not great at Elden Ring, and I've also done two and a half. One aborted restart and two proper playthroughs. And in both of them I ended up just hitting him with a big sword. Because I'm not good at the game. I don't know how to play it another way. I could do the magic way, but that didn't seem fun to me.
Mm-hmm. And like I tried to do a double like katana dex build, and it worked, and I got pretty good at it. You know, it was different than just big sword and hit 'em. You know, you needed to be a little bit more, or you need to be better at your dodges. And then I got up into the end game, and then it's like, you know, oh, well, like, I want to kill Malenia again. And then I got stuck there. And so it just, it's not...
And to be clear, not because a dex build can't beat, just, you know, it takes a, you know, you got to master a new thing.
Well, it just started to become a chore, less fun. But I wanted, you know... I started that playthrough with an idea of I want to see a different ending and see the different choices that affect the world. Too much work.
Yeah.
To be honest. And maybe that's because, you know, something we're talking about in a little bit, you know, I've changed since Skyrim came out.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like those kind of more, you know, mid-oddies games were just set up differently. They had more, you know, more short encounters, and like, if you want to see the effect of this choice, 30 hours and then it's done.
It won't take you as long to
beat the game in 30 hours if you know, do all the things for this one specific ending.
Right. There's also there's a difference between
Cyberpunk kind of, that's probably the most recent. I would say Cyberpunk 2077 falls in the category of what we were talking about, where it is not, it's big enough where it feels like all the choices matter and like you get to see all the effects, but it's short enough that you can replay it several times.
I think that leads into also the way you play Cyberpunk. The way you play Cyberpunk is a lot the same way you play like New Vegas or Skyrim. You know, you're running around in first person and you got a gun. So when you're in a fight, you're playing a fun first person shooter. That's the same way New Vegas is. It's a better first-person shooter than New Vegas, decidedly. But the, you know, the actual, like, gameplay loop, when you're not in a conversation, when you're not traveling between locations, the gameplay loop of going through a mission is, like, you know, stealthing through an area or, you know, shooting your gun and using your grenades and your powers and stuff. Mass Effect is kind of the same way, where, you know... Definitely a role-playing game. You get to make choices. People live and die. Entire species are affected negatively or positively by your actions. But the gameplay loop that gets you from these conversation points and these, you know, crucial decision points, the gameplay loop is a fun third-person cover shooter. And in the first two games, there was a really cool... tactical, like, time-freezing element, and that it mattered a lot less in Mass Effect 3, but it was there. So it was funner. It was more fun to play than, I would say, you know, like Baldur's Gate is. And Elden Ring is fun to play, but the pace is much slower. The pace demands mastery. walk into an area and you're like, okay, shit, these guys kicked my ass. I may be the correct level for this and have all the right gear. I still need to learn how to fight these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it asks you to stay there for a while and to repeat the same thing. And some things are more challenging than others, and I would say Elden Ring does not have, because of its open world freedom, it doesn't have a great difficulty curve. Some areas are just weirdly harder than the areas around them. Sometimes that doesn't make very much sense. Sometimes it takes a lot longer for you to get through stuff because of it.
That's very true. The gameplays are a lot different.
Yeah. The another thing, I think this is an appropriate time to bring up The Witcher.
Okay.
I think The Witcher 3 is definitely, and that's the main one we're talking about. The other two exist, and I have touched them, but I don't know enough about them to really.
Yeah, I bought them in a big pack, and I started up Witcher 1 and was like, what the fuck is this?
Witcher 1 is jank for days. Witcher 2 is less so, but it is not nearly as accessible as Witcher 3. Witcher 3 is a very accessible, fairly easy to play video game. And while you don't get to create your character, you get to make decisions as Geralt that have ramifications, and all of the decisions, according to the writers, are supposedly things that Geralt would consider doing. So, you don't get to create your character, but you get to roleplay as Geralt, and there are effects. But there is so much dense narrative stuff that, you know, to get a different result, you kind of have to just slog through.
Mm-hmm.
Up until that, like, crucial decision point.
Yeah, the point, like, you've picked out that, like, I want to do something different this time.
Yeah.
To get there takes a lot, right? Which then comes into the, like, how you can, like, simulate that is, you know, like, save scum and just, like, oh, well, I'm going to save before I make this choice, and then, let's see what the other one is.
Right.
Reload.
You can get to the end of the whole Bloody Baron arc, right? And then, you know, depending on how you end that, maybe he kills himself. Maybe you kill him. I don't remember all the different ways that can end. Maybe he's good now. I don't know. But regardless, you got to play all the way up to there. You got to do all his dumb little fetch quest bullshit. Mm-hmm. You got to do all his chores. And he won't tell you the answer until you get him to the point where he will, and then you do, and then you make a decision. So instead of replaying that game, if you want to just see what it is, you kind of just, you can make strategic saves and see, like, okay, what does it look like if I do this? All right, cool. Reset the save, try something different. And that doesn't really, for me at least, doesn't really facilitate doing the whole thing over and over again, because you still got to play, you still got to go through all the same dumb conversations and chores in order to get to those crucial decision moments.
Right, which comes from kind of, I guess, which is now like a through line, because I keep coming back to it. The way, and like you mentioned, different like intentional play loops of these games. So like The Witcher 3 is like you have to do all the prep work to do the decision, where like in Fallout New Vegas you could just go to that place,
right?
You like can skip a bunch of prep work,
yeah, because it's right, because it's a true open world.
Yeah,
so you can just wander over here and you can be like, my character wants to wander this way, and then, oh, I'm talking to this guy. And now you're in the thing that you were excited to check out.
Right, like if I want to become part of the Legion, I can do that so fast. Mm-hmm. Like, you just got to go to the right place and then be like,
and trigger that event. Hey. And now you're talking to a
boom.
Guy.
We're talking to a guy, and like, then you get invited, and then boom, you're Legion now. You know, you don't have to spend 15 hours getting up to the decision point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I think now's the perfect time to talk about These are definitely just our tastes
right.
we're talking about.
That whole rambling section there that was about the problem that we see with these games that are so big and demand so much of your time and why they are not fun for us to replay anymore.
And I think a large part of that Cosmo hit on is the gameplay loop of those games are just not our style, like aren't our taste.
They're not as, like, 30 seconds of repeating fun the way, you know, Halo was designed to be.
Right, and so, we haven't talked about any games that we hate. We still enjoy all these games that we've been talking about.
Yes.
We just, our tastes are more of the older games. And, you know, we recognize that that's maybe because we're a little crotchety. Because our tastes have changed, no doubt. Mm-hmm. And for sure as fuck, our time constraints have changed, right? Because when Fallout New Vegas came out, we were in fucking high school.
Yeah.
Or just out of high school. So, like, of course, we had different time constraints and we could engage more and, like, etc.
Right. But I will say, in addition to our time constraints changing since high school, our two time constraints are different now. Because I've got two kids, and you don't. But we are still feeling kind of the same way about these games.
Yeah.
Even though between the two of us, our time constraints are very different. We're still feeling the same way. So there is an element of stuff has definitely changed, or the thing that we really liked has maybe kind of vanished for some reason.
Well,
but
we have a couple reasons.
But to be fair, definitely our tastes have changed a little bit, and 100% our time constraints have changed.
Yeah. And also there's the nostalgia factor. Right, like we played those games at specific times. We have memories associated with those.
Right. So it's really fun to get back to them.
Right. You know, those are our, you know, comforts.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in addition to us changing, the industry has changed as well. Right? With the explosion and kind of, I wouldn't say separation of paths. Oh, maybe I would say that. But, like, so there's, like, the quick multiplayer, the MOBAs, and the MMOs. So, like, a lot of creative capital is being moved towards those games, right? Because they make money.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you got your, like, Helldivers. And
a live service.
You know, live service. Know,
meant to be played on repeat for a long time and designed very well to be repeatable that way.
And, like, your multiplayers, whether it's, you know, cooperative or PvP, there's a lot of those games because people find them fun and, like, yeah, I find them a little fun too. You know, like, and then, like, you know, you have your, what do they call those? You know, War Zones, PUB.
Extraction shooters. Oh, no, Battle Royales.
Battle Royales, yeah. Battle Royales,
extraction shooters. They're very similar. They're brothers, right. I think.
There's, Division, yeah. etc.
They're like, sibling-type games. Extraction shooter is different than a Battle Royale, but I think they go hand-in-hand, kind of.
Right, so, like, those get you your quick, like, 20-minute role players, right? Because, like, you have all this custom shit, and, like, you know, how are we going to move around the map, and, like, you know, how are we going to do the raid, you know, how are we going to do the Helldivers mission, how are we going to do the Space Marine mission? So, like, those are things that are light on the decisions.
Yeah.
And also, just, well, we put Helldivers and Destiny on the same line here, but vastly different.
Yeah.
Cause,
but I think not that different. Both of what they, both games ask you for the same thing, which is like a 20 to 30 minute
Yeah.
You know.
I think that's the same. But I think what Destiny tried to be, Helldivers was like, no, we ain't that.
That's, yeah.
Right? Because, like, there's all that bullshit in Destiny of, like, oh, it's open world. It is not.
Yeah.
It fucking is not. Yeah, you gotta go run around and grab your, like, bullshit fucking plants.
Back in vanilla Destiny, you, like, you couldn't just stay on a planet and do another mission. You had to load back to your ship and then reload the map to launch a new mission. Mm-hmm. That's since changed a little bit, but yeah, the, like, the, I guess I'm, you know what, I'm gonna take a little bit of time right now and be salty about,
fuck yeah,
especially vanilla Destiny extending into Destiny 2 up until I stopped playing it. It was just a lie. I think it was fundamentally misrepresented, and I am still resentful of what I got excited about and what they actually delivered, the absolute just like content anemic product that they gave us, and then wanted to charge us additional, you know, $40 every quarter for another like 3 single player missions. I hate it. It's infuriating. There was a version of it that was fun around, yeah, I don't know, like a year into Destiny 2, where it was just fun to play a strike playlist and you didn't need to be super specced out. You didn't need to be max level anything. You didn't need to have meta fucking gear loadouts. It was just okay to load into the strike playlist and play a very well-made shooter. But the way you engage with the world, the character that you sort of created, which is absolutely meaningless, and the payoff for engaging with the world was just, I feel very strongly it was not what we were promised in the beginning when they were like, this is what mm-hmm. Destiny is going to be. And as it evolved into the successful, the monetarily successful live shooter that it is, live service multiplayer shooter, it never got back to that. It never delivered on a promise that I feel like was made during the initial promotional cycle, which was, this is a world that you're going to be able to, you know, freely explore mm-hmm. and essentially roleplay. And even though they never called it a role-playing game, really, I mean, they do sort of, but again, we talked about how Borderlands doesn't count, because just because you have a skill tree, just because there's character progression, doesn't make it a role-playing game.
And like, you in Borderlands, you can choose, like, oh, do I, you know, give the item to Moxie, or do I give it to Scooter?
Right.
That doesn't really count. It has no effect on the story. You just get a different reward.
Yeah, you get a different item.
You choose
item.
A different gun.
Right.
Oh, yay. Which is still cool.
But even
don't
that,
get me wrong.
Even that, though, that's, you know, that's more choice than yeah. Destiny ever gave. So.
God. And I got tricked so many times by Destiny.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I'm also, like, I'm on the edge of being tricked by Marathon. It's not even out yet.
So
they do such a good job marketing and making yeah. me excited about a new sci-fi world.
And that it happens again and again, right? Because people buy the games and some people enjoy them more than others. And so I think that's a data point, and tastes have changed a little bit
yeah.
because apparently that's okay. Now, like, you know, that type of game, and like, you know, here's a bunch of promises that we're only half going to deliver on, still apparently makes money, so they keep doing it.
Right.
Which is not necessarily wrong, because people enjoy it, and that's okay.
Right. They are right? selling people a product that at least some people like, and the people yeah. who like it are continuing to buy it. I don't think anyone like us who saw what Destiny was and were like, oh, that's not what I thought it was going to be. I don't like this.
Mm-hmm.
They're not continuing to shell out for the DLCs.
Yeah. But so that's one type of, you know, role playing game now, is the like quick 20 minutes you pop in, kind of like the in game in World of Warcraft, where like once you've done all the things,
yeah.
Like, you can, you pop in for a raid, or, you know, you pop in to do an instance or two. And, like, yeah, it's fun. But, like, you don't have to spend 30 hours getting up to a point, right? You're already there, like, you're in the end game, and, like, you know, you pop in for 20 minutes when you have time.
Yeah.
So, that brings us to the complete opposite of that.
Right. Which is these huge, long,
mm-hmm.
which are definitely role-playing games. No, no,
no question.
Yeah, no buts about it. You know, Baldur's Gate 3, gigantic. I don't even know how many hours a normal playthrough is supposed to be, and then however infinitely that expands when you consider different party makeups and new playthroughs and shit. Elden Ring, The Witcher 3, huge games that, you know, demand a ton of time, but for us, even though they are a good time, they're not a good time to come back to, really. It's not like it is not a fun gameplay loop. Like, I never liked the sword fighting in The Witcher 3.
Oh yeah, horrible.
I well, did not
for me. Yeah.
I just didn't like it. And then Elden Ring came along, I was like, okay, I like the sword fighting. But Elden Ring wants to hurt you. Elden Ring wants to punish you. Elden Ring wants to force you to get good at, you know, specific things. So even though I like that sword fighting,
I'm there for it. Yeah. Hurt me, mommy.
Yeah.
Hurt me, daddy.
Step on me, big troll.
But, like, it's not something that I can pop into casually.
Yeah. Yeah, if I'm, like, that's why I've only got three playthroughs, and one of them is very short and abortive, is because it's not quick, it's not, it's just, it demands this level of commitment. It
demands commitment and patience.
Yeah.
Which is not always what I'm looking for.
Right. And there's, like, you know, once you've played through The Witcher 3 one time, it would almost be better as a, like, choose-your-own-adventure novel or, like, movie where you could, you know, you could skip the part where you're just, like, walking through the woods and a wolf might attack you, or you might find a bandit camp, because that's so inconsequential. It's so, like, boring and useless. And there's so many dumb, useless things to pick up, and an alchemy system and a crafting system that you could just, like, you could dump those out of the game and nobody would... Even people who say, like, oh, that's cool, you get to make such great stuff. If you took those out of the game, nobody would care.
Wouldn't be missed.
Yeah. It would be almost better as, like, a Telltale game, where you just, like, watch the cool stuff, watch the cutscenes, and then make the dialogue choices, and the, you know, I choose to kill him, and then instead of going into a combat, it would just
kill him.
Yeah. So that you could see the branching choices.
Right, and that's also why they, like, invented, you know, YouTube. Not really, but...
No, but, yeah, that is... I mean, I'm not gonna... Yeah. I decided I wasn't gonna play Space Marine 2, but I watched the campaign. It was all right, and I got what I think I needed of it, and I didn't have to spend $70.
So, then the next kind of type that's more common in video games of role-playing... is, like, the bring your own role-playing to it, right? Helldivers gets a mention here again, where it is not a role-playing game, but you can role-play in it, and you can, you know, spend a shitload of hours just having fun.
Yeah, and you can, in your own head, because all your Helldivers are, you know, like, frozen clones. You can be like, my regiment is these guys, and they behave this way, and they talk this way. And, you know, we only fight on Malevolon Creek. We only fight the bots.
Yeah.
We were cloned and made to fight the bots, and that's our whole fucking deal. And you can get so deep into role-playing with that. The game will never reciprocate.
You're never getting payoff from the game, right? It's all in your mind.
Right. Project Zomboids, cool one. Because it's all survival, crafting, exploration.
Sandboxy, where, like... you can do what you want, but, like, you're never get, you know, you can make a bar. You clear out a bar and, like, go scavenge a bunch of liquor to keep behind the bar and set it up all nice and get yourself a pinball machine. Nobody ever going to walk into that bar, though, except for a zombie.
Or a co-op player.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But then, you know, if but you're playing it. On, like, if you're playing know, online, you're, like, I'm making they're this probably going to try people. To kill you.
Right, yeah, if it's a rando, yeah, if it's not your friend that you squatted up with on purpose, you're right, yeah, they're probably going to try and take it from you.
Yeah.
And or it's a zombie. But there's some role-playing in that, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, I built this bar, oh, nobody's coming, and a zombie came in, and I got to defend my bar now from the zombies.
Right, like, Minecraft is another one where... You can role play as a, you know, king in the castle. You can build yourself a nice castle and, like, make it up all pretty and, like, you know, etc. Or whatever you want to bring to it. But it's not going to basically tell you you did a good job being a king, I guess. You know, the way that, like, Skyrim tells you, good job being a thief. You're now lord of the thief.
Or you,
the thief
you've leveled up your fucking skill. You know, good job with two swords.
Yeah.
You're so good at it. That, yeah. The game is not going to reciprocate your role-playing, but you can sit there in your chair, role-playing in your head, while you play the game. And in that sense, yeah, it's endlessly replayable, and it is endlessly role-playable.
I think also, in general, the explosion of the indie market and, like, roguelike games have just really, you know, changed tastes. Because you get these incredible little, like, stories, like, what's the one I'm looking for? Children of Morta. It's a Switch game, or at least I played it on the Switch. I think it's on Steam, too.
I know, like, of it. Yeah. I've not.
Incredible story and fun gameplay, you know, roguelike where you go into a dungeon and then, like, you can die several times, go back in there, but then once you do it, it advances the story. And so, like, you know, on that borderline of a roleplay, but you never really get to make a choice, you know?
I dig.
So, like, I guess we are reminiscing about the good old days.
We are.
Of these, and I, like, middle grounds.
So, I thought of something. It isn't in our signposting, but we're going to do it. So that there's a payoff. one for us, because this will be fun for us to talk about, and also for the listeners who stuck around. we appreciate you. I mean, if you like to hear us yap, that's probably why you're here.
I mean, like, yeah, but hopefully you got your brain a little bit itchy about what you engage with. But.
Yeah. So, okay, let's just real quick, each of us, and maybe we'll collaborate if that's what it turns into.
Okay.
Trailer drops tomorrow. It's coming out next year. What is the game? What is the next one that is going to scratch this itch? It is going to be... you know, it's going to have lots of replayability, but it's also going to scratch the, like, deep role-playing, satisfying itches. What is it if you could have, if you could have it? If you could just spin it out of your brain right now.
Well, there's some huge gaps in how to make this actually possible. But I think space deserves another try.
Okay.
I think Outer Worlds got there most of the way.
Yeah.
Starfield was bad.
Starfield whiffed it real hard. Yeah. Did not deliver on really anything that I wanted. There were some cool guns in it. But there's cool guns in a lot of other video games.
So it'd be, and it would be different than Mass Effect, but it would have some lessons from Mass Effect. And actually, now that I say that, maybe that's not the way to go because Mass Effect already been there, done that. Maybe space isn't the way to go. But I think a more gritty space, like what Starfield almost, and I don't even know if it tried to be this, but and like some so something more akin to like The Expanse, where it's more smaller scale, because like in Mass Effect, you're jumping around the whole galaxy. There's right. all these different races and etc.
Outer Worlds is confined to a single yeah. solar system.
Mm-hmm. So something like that. But then you would have to solve the problem, because I think where Outer Worlds ignored it and Starfield fumbled it because they didn't ignore it, like the ship and like the travel, how do you do that well? Mm-hmm. Because if you're on, if it's not going to be Mass Effect where there's this whole story about like interstellar travel and, you know, all this shit, then it's hard to make it meaningful but still have it in the game, right? Which is why like Outer Worlds just kind of ignored it. And then Starfield was like, yeah, you can, like, you know, get in a start. You jump to a planet, and, like, there's pirates there, and then you gotta fight them, and, like, then you gotta get in the load screen to get in your cockpit, and then you gotta get out of the cockpit, and then you gotta get out of the ship, and then you're there at the space.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, how would I solve that problem? I take back what I said. Maybe space isn't the answer.
Okay.
I'm gonna go fantasy. Hard opposite of what I started with. I'm thinking it's a fantasy. I'm thinking it is a new, well, so new as in it would be like, it would be like a Elder Scrolls game where you're restricted to one area, country, mm-hmm. region, continent, etc. But it wouldn't be Cyrodiil or whatever the fuck they call that
right.
continent. I really like the Forbidden Lands kind of lore.
Oh, okay. So like an Elder Scrolls game, but in Forbidden Lands?
Yeah.
Hex crawling through the demon mist wilderness,
mm-hmm.
and then like you get to a place and there's something there.
That would even be,
you could do yeah. a ton of procedural generation stuff mm-hmm. in that to change playthroughs. Because yeah, like as you travel, you could come across a castle or a
fucking or a couple thespians practicing their play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, long-time listeners will remember.
Yeah,
faithful listeners.
So that's what I'd go with. And like the trailer would be, right? You liked Elder Scrolls.
Yeah.
You know about the Forbidden Lands. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. So the yeah, that's what it'd be. Done. Answered.
Love it. Okay. I think mine would be. Mine would be like Darkest Dungeon. That same presentation, like 2D party, okay. party uh-huh. is walking either left or right across the screen. But instead of procedurally generated dungeons, it would be a region map. So you would be like, you would be at a signpost, and that signpost would be a fork in the road, and you'd be like, this way to this town. And then it would be a much longer hallway than in Darkest Dungeon, with a lot of different stuff that could happen. More like an open world, you know, more like an open world Witcher type
mm-hmm.
setting, but presented in the Darkest Dungeon style with the side scrolling. But in addition to Darkest Dungeon style navigation and combat, there would be you know, character portraits come up, you're talking to this NPC, lots of dialogue choices, that sort of stuff. Just like a like the Crimson Court expansion of Darkest Dungeon, where it's a fixed map instead of a random little dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
That expanded to a whole like overworld travel with lots of like dungeons that you could go into. You go down into the dungeon, slay the monster, then you come sure. back up to your camp, so- and
kind of like a mix between Darkest Dungeon, Darkest Dungeon 2. So like the overworld travel would be like in a, you know, a caravan cart.
I don't know if it would be in a caravan cart, and it certainly wouldn't be presented that way. I don't like the presentation of Darkest Dungeon 2. It would still be your four guys in a row, 2D, walking along a forest path.
Okay.
What
would be the setting or lore?
The setting or lore... there's a few different set. It could be an original setting, or it could be something in the Darkest Dungeon universe, or it could be like a Call of Cthulhu spinoff, even.
With something Eldritch.
Yeah, some Eldritch horror, undead, unholy stuff, and you guys are flames against the darkness, mutation cultists. I love that stuff. Love that with all my heart.
It could be
Warhammer fantasy, not Age of Sigmar, but old school Warhammer fantasy. That was very much that.
But a mix of guns and swords.
Yeah,
they call that.
Yeah, the Renaissance era. A knight in heavy plate, but also like a rogue with a pistol.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think it would be cool to make a character. And then, have just, like, a bunch of pre-made companions, because they could die, and then you, like, hire replacements. But if your pre-made character, and your pre-made character, not pre-made, but the character that you make, if they die, that's a game over, go back to last save. And they're the ones who talk to...
Everybody.
Yeah, who talk to other NPCs and, get quests and stuff.
I mean, I don't want to slag it off because I kind of like it, but it's so annoying when in Baldur's Gate 3, you get into a conversation and you're like...
And then Gale jumps in with something to fucking say.
Well, that's fine. I like that. But you can accidentally start a conversation as one of your companions. Mm. I hate that.
Yeah. There needs to be a little bit of structure.
Mm-hmm.
About hey, you're entering into a conversation, who's taking the lead type of mechanic,
or just it's always the main character main character.
Yeah, it's just always you,
right?
Unless
it's their cutscene.
Yeah, unless it's their cutscene, it gives you the option type of thing. Yeah. So that would be my thing. I love Darkest Dungeon, but the the endless repeatable procedural generated stuff, I would like a bespoke county or realm that you're going through.
So would gameplay be party order, or by order I mean a positioned, or would it be...
Combat would be positional, similar to Darkest Dungeon. Maybe not a one-for-one recreation, but an iteration of that.
Well, okay, let me rephrase the question.
Okay.
Would it be a... set 2D order of 1-2 position 1-2-3-4, or would it be a Banner Saga?
Saga is fucking good.
Map where it's
and then it switches to a chessboard for combat.
Yes.
No, it would be more like Darkest Dungeon, where your party is going through the forest, and if goblins attack you in the forest, it just is combat now.
Yeah.
That's how I'd like it, and maybe it wouldn't be a fantasy. I mentioned Call of Cthulhu because I like the the Eldritch stuff. It could be Indiana Jones type of turn of the century, submachine guns, revolvers type of thing. The use of firearms and grenades and stuff, that wouldn't necessarily be a huge part of it. It would still just be Darkest Dungeon combat moves. But, you go through that, you play through the story, you solve a mystery, stop a big evil. Or maybe you are evil. There would at least be the option for you to be evil.
There you go. At least the option.
Yeah. All right. I feel like we said everything we wanted to say.
Yeah. I think so.
That was fun. It started salty. We groused a lot. But we're talking about essentially a lot of things that we do really like.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's recap. What did we talk about? We defined what a video game RPG is for the context of this conversation.
For the context of this conversation, which was choices that are made in character that affect the story.
Yep.
We talked about the replayability of an RPG, why will you ever replay a video game, and then that's going to come through for sure, right?
That yeah. siren? A little bit of siren.
Hell yeah.
It was a fire truck, guys. We're okay.
Why you'd ever replay a video game, it's like, you know, rereading a book, re-experiencing stuff, you know, you've changed since the last time you experienced it. But then, why you would replay a role-playing game is you get to make different choices and see those choices affect the game.
Yeah.
Which is why there's such a problem with replaying these long fucking epics.
Yeah.
Because the time sink is just too much. You got to play 50 hours to make a choice, and then you got to play 30 more to see how that choice is different.
And the specific gameplay loop, like, it is fun to play Halo 30 seconds at a time. It is kind of boring to play Baldur's Gate 30 seconds at a time. But then you get to something cool.
Yeah. And you can get around that by kind of save scumming, where, like, you know, oh, here's the decision point, save. I try this one. You play,
explore,
you know,
3 hours yeah.
on. All right, reload, play another 3 hours. But there's problems with that, too. One, it feels kind of scummy. And two, that just extends the time without any real payoff, I think. Anyways,
yeah.
We already talked about that. And then we just talked, you know, checked ourselves. This is our taste that we were talking about. Obviously, it's different from person to person. Our time constraints have changed over the years, so what we liked probably has a little bit of a, you know, nostalgia aspect to it. And then we talked about the kind of different paths video games have kind of separated themselves into. Is you got, like, the quick 20 minutes, you pop in for 20 minutes, you have a good time, and then you don't have to continue. Then you have the long fucking campaigns where it's like, well, I better carve 5 hours out to make some progress.
Where you inch forward in increments.
And then we got, like, kind of the sandbox, which is huge potential for roleplay, but you got to bring it all yourself.
Yeah, the game's not going to reward you in Minecraft. No matter how much roleplaying you're doing, the game is not going to give it back to you.
Mm-hmm. So where the middle ground go, right? And then we talked about what would be our...
Yeah.
Middle ground, like,
what,
you know,
is our dream
we
thing?
We could have something pop out,
cool,
of the
replayable
ether.
RPG.
Mine was basically just a Skyrim, but just in a different setting and different mechanics. Cosmos was a Darkest Dungeon, but
big open, you know, world.
Big open world. Boom.
I think that's it. All right. Thank you for joining us for that episode of Two-Headed Game Master. That's going to be it for us tonight. If you like what you heard, we got a bunch of other episodes to check out. And also head on over to 2hgm.com, where you can see some other stuff of ours.
Yeah. First thing will be Afterlife, post-apocalypse fantasy role-playing, available now on DriveThruRPG.
Mm-hmm.
It's our own original setting and game system for tabletops. And you can buy a print version and get the PDF for free.
Yep.
So you can, you know, send the PDF to all your buddies. Also, there's some other stuff on our website. You know, RPG Lights, which is a very setting agnostic, you know, little role play system if you want to rip something in the car. A couple other things there too. Biggest thing though, Patreon. Join our Patreon, get access to our Discord,
mm-hmm.
where we do live events like the Halloween special you've probably listened to recently. If you haven't, go do it.
Pretty
where
cool.
We do a spooky one-shot live play, and if you're on the Discord, you get, you know, some more access to that, even be a player sometimes.
Yep. So check it out. Thank you to the Burning Saviors.
I do have a recommendation.
Oh, you have
today.
A recommendation first.
Yeah.
Throw it.
It's a book. A book recommendation. The Adventures of Amina al-Sarafi.
Okay.
A fun adventure sailing set in, well, the real world. And it's in the Indian Ocean, which was a unique kind of, you know, doesn't get talked about a lot.
Yeah.
So
novel
cool
setting.
Cool pirate venture romp.
Love it. All right, check it out. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pond Hill is Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we will see y'all next time.
See you next time.